We got Houston Alexander joining us once again here on Pure Evil MMA. What's going on, champ? How you been?
What's going on, brother? Are you being evil right now?
No, I'm not being evil right now. I actually, I got my girl behind me.
Well, I'm being evil because you're going to ruin my dinner.
Oh, champ.
I can't win this. The funny part is, like, I just got off the line with Mayhem. I was trying to get, you know, the interview with Mayhem Miller, and he's... I know, I will. He'll appreciate that as well. But, you know, it's been a couple of months since we last talked. I got a couple of things I really want to talk to you about because, you know, we usually talk about MMA, but right now I was going down the Houston Alexander rabbit hole, and I want to start here.
Hey, hopefully we haven't dug too deep. I beat my son up because he was acting crazy.
No. Listen, I showed my girl a video of you on this TV show called, like, Science. I forgot exactly what it was called, but it was, like, about adrenaline where they actually had you do, like, a punch normally, you getting, like, all stressed out doing the punch. How did that come about? And, like, you know, honestly... In that time, man, that was a really serious thing to watch, sit down, like, see you tear up in that. Do fighters usually get like that beforehand, or is it better to, like, enter the cage more relaxed? Like, is that, like, a good description of how things would be in a cage? Or do you come out like that?
I think when I went and did it at the time, and they did the test, I think it was the way I was thinking, because I never like to lose. Nobody in life likes to lose. And then I think my will to not lose was stronger than any type of adrenaline. You know what I'm saying? And to me, you know, if you have to take drugs, you're cheating.
Yeah.
I don't care what type of drugs it is. If you're taking drugs to advance yourself, then you're not putting in the work. So you might be putting in the work, but you're trying to advance yourself by using drugs. So I think, man, it was just me having the will not to want to lose. You feel what I'm saying?
So what was the difference between the natural adrenaline and when you did that last test? Like, what was the difference there? Obviously, there was 1,000 pounds of pressure, which is almost double of what a punch would be. So then you look back at all the news stories of, you know, John Jones and everything like that. I mean... Do you think you would be able to reach that same height with more emotion, more drive? Like, we saw Walt Harris versus Overeem. I'm sure he felt a lot of adrenaline during that fight.
You know what, dog? I'm gonna be real with you.
Okay.
That the way I was feeling and the type of person I am, I think it would have happened naturally for me because I'm not, you know, again, I was never the guy to use drugs, and when they stuck me with it, I felt a little bit of it. But I could have hit that dummy harder if they would have actually had me being in a position to where I could punch him. Because they had me in TV position.
Exactly.
They didn't have me in fighter position. There's a difference. Fighter position, TV position. They had me in TV position with my hand down. If I would have had my hand up, I would have probably got more poundage into the dummy if I ever had my hand up in the right position. But, man, you know, again, I think it's the will, all of our wills to win, no matter what position you are in.
So how hard would you punch me right now for interrupting dinner? I mean, how much?
Oh, man, no, you get fucked up.
It sounds like it's...
It'd probably be 3,000 pounds of pressure if you had worked in my potatoes, brother.
With a choke slam, too. With a choke slam. I would have, yeah.
Oh, man, I'm having a great dinner. Matter of fact, let me grab these potatoes real quick.
Here's the only thing I'm going to ask about MMA. What is the highlight of your career? Throw everything. What's, like, the moment that if somebody came up to you and was like, you know, I'm doing a third grade project about your story, what would be the story that you bring up? What's the most memorable moment of your career?
Oh, man, if you truthfully?
Yes, please.
My phone
just... No. Houston, no. So classic. Hold on, I'm going to call him back right here. All right, let me get this off of screen. Not a good thing. Come on right now. All right, so we just lost Houston. Eartha Houston.
Oh,
And I gotta find Messenger really quick, because that is not a good thing as a journalist, especially when you're interrupting dinner right now. Houston's already about to kill me. Mayhem's about to kill me. And those are two guys you do not want coming after you, I'll tell you that. I'm going to send, and my girlfriend's going to come after me in a minute, too. So I'm screwed, guys. I'm screwed. All right, let me give him a call. All right, we got this up on the screen. Hopefully I'm not doxing him right now. How do I make a call? Oh, yeah, yeah, right now. Unreal. FaceTime video. All right. I'm going to do FaceTime audio, hopefully. All right, here we go. Calling Houston back. Either way, my phone's turning on right now. All right, so sorry about that, guys. We live, and this is just something we got to get used to here in Pure Evil MA. Something I always tell my girlfriend and my friends. We're going to have to make sure my phone's charged up. This just gives him a second to eat his potatoes. All right, hold on. All right, we're calling Champ back right now. Man, now they said 3,000 pounds of pressure. I think I might get 4,000 pounds of pressure. So let's call the champ back. Houston Alexander. Classic. My swing arm back. Champ, it went from 3,000 pounds of pressure from a punch to 4,000 now, I feel. Yeah, we're good. We're good now. We're good.
Oh, okay, well, it's not me. My phone is fully charged up, man.
Oh, my God. I'm about to get beat up by Houston, Alexander, and Mayhem Miller.
No, you're not about to get beat up because we're not getting paid.
Oh. All right. So let me ask you another question. Let's move on from what we were just discussing.
I'll finish the question where you were asking.
All right. We can do that, too. All right, so we were literally just talking about the adrenaline. Let's go back to Bisping versus Anderson Silva. You remember that fight? I think O2 yeah. Arena. And Anderson Silva lands a knee as Michael Bisping's mouth guard was out, and there has to be a null in action for them to be split up. Now, yeah. Michael Bisping points to the ref and points to his mouthpiece. Anderson Silva, in that moment, lands that knee. He thinks he won the fight. Now, there's an adrenaline dump there. Can you explain to listeners what that must feel like, and how could you rebuild that after, you know, thinking you won a fight? Like, what would that be like?
Silva won the fight, and in my eyes, and probably a whole bunch of other people's eyes, that he won the fight because I just don't understand how you can just stop things like that. You know, I understand there's rules to the game, but I don't understand why you just stop something like that. So I think he won. I think he won, and Bisping noted that he won. But come on, man! It's you can watch it, and then you don't even have to analyze the whole situation and come to the realization what it was.
That was a huge career-changing moment for Michael Bisping, and I was flipping out when that was going down. Didn't understand what.
Yeah, it's all good, man. And again, Bisping, if the MMA gods was in his favor, hey, it was in his favor.
Especially, it was his birthday. It was Michael Bisping's.
Come on, man!
O2 Arena. Yeah, exactly. So let me ask you this, because this goes right into it. One of your training partners, you know, Anthony Smith versus Glover, you know, he went through hell. My girlfriend was having such a hard time watching that fight. What was he experienced through that with adrenaline? Because I'm sure that's got to be really intense. What would you be feeling in those moments? And do you think...
Don't worry about anything else. If I'm ready to go as a fighter, I'm ready to go. So I'm going to go with what Anthony said. Anthony said that he was ready to go and that he was willing to fight to the death. A lot of people say all the time, hey man, I'm ready to fight to the death. That young man decided he wanted to fight to the death. And guess what? He responded. Every time the ref wanted him to respond,
he did.
Responded. So, you know what? Hey, you can't get mad at that. If he didn't want to quit, you know, fuck it. He's paying his corner. He's paying the people around him. So if he tells his corner, hey, I don't wanna fight, unless you see this guy physically dying in the ring, you know, but you see him being, you know, I'm gonna go with Anthony on that. I'd rather finish it out on my terms than to worry about the corner. But see, that's coming from a fighter though. That doesn't take away from the corner, but it just me just being a fighter, thinking fighter wise.
I've had plenty of conversations with fighters, including my co-host, James McSweeney, who says, you know, the positions I've been in, if my corner says, James, you got to go out there or throw in the towel, he said, you better not do that. You know, this is up to me.
Again, that's the one the corner has to protect the fighters. But I didn't see it to where Anthony wasn't defending himself.
Exactly.
If he was sitting and laying on the ground like a bitch, then I would have been like, okay, throw in the towel. But he wasn't sitting on the ground. He wasn't sitting there like a bitch. You feel what I'm saying? He still was conscious of what he was doing.
And that's the thing. I was screaming that to my girlfriend at the time. She was like, "Why weren't they stopping this?" I was like, "He's intelligently defending himself still."
Yeah, exactly. He's defending himself. So move on to the next question.
And we've seen fighters, you know, punch themselves out. I believe Anthony was probably waiting for that to get back up. So I agree. Yeah.
Let's go on to the next question,
Lee. All right, I got you. All right, this is completely off MMA. 1980, we're going back to Omaha. We're going back to the Scribble Crew, the graffiti. Are you still doing that kind of stuff? Because I love graffiti.
Did catch that joke, did you?
No, I didn't hear it. What'd you say?
I said I'm not a porn star.
Come on right now. I'm getting killed today, man. I'm getting killed today,
man,
over here.
Hey, you just got off the phone with Mayhem. Don't treat me like a scrub.
No, you have no idea. Mayhem caused so much stress right now for me.
Oh, so he's straight out. Okay, you know what? I'll bring it down a couple of notches.
No, not you.
If Mayhem stressed you out, I'll be the
voice of reason.
The progressive conservative.
So you actually have, a long history outside of MMA. You know, with and Omaha, the Scribble Crew and graffiti. That's something we haven't talked about yet. I never knew that about you before in the past with the hip-hop thing going on. I've seen you do the dancing thing on YouTube.
Let me check you on that right there. Because the dancing, the art, and all the other things that surrounds hip-hop is all the same thing. It's part of the culture, man. So it's part of the same exact thing. So I've never, you knew about it, but you never asked me about that particular subject. So it's all the same thing, man. It's just a different segue to that the culture. So now we can talk about the art part that I used to do.
All right.
Or I still do, because I still paint.
So we've talked about, you know, growing up in certain areas and stuff like that. And I love driving around the city, seeing new graffiti, seeing, landmarks that are around there. Apparently, there's still some artwork that you have up around. Was it in Omaha, correct?
Yeah, well, I've done a couple of porch of studios inside. So, you know, there's a few studios. Before this, I did an MMA jam maybe a month ago. So if it's inside, I usually do it. I've done a lot of it, but it doesn't matter whether it was inside or outside. I'm still doing it, man. As long as people commission me to do it, I do it.
You know, explain the difference between the era back then, because you were still involved in the hip hop scene. You still are. You're still DJing.
Still DJing, all the elements of hip hop I'm still involved with.
What are the biggest difference that you're seeing now with, you know, successful artists in that genre compared to when you were growing up and the excitement and motivation that you felt? What are you seeing now? Is it motivational or is it kind of sad to see? How do you feel about?
No. It's all the same. But except for we have the number one genre of music in the world right now. You know, the rap is the number one genre of music versus country or versus rock, in which black people already invented anyway. But that's another subject. But all it's all the same to me. But back then it was just fresh to see the culture blow up the way it did. You know what I'm saying? Because we knew us guys who were in the culture back then knew the potential that it had in 2020. So we wasn't worried about it because we saw how it was going to expand. But what I don't like is I don't like people taking advantage of the culture. And if you're taking advantage of the culture and you just using the culture to get ahead, then you're a bitch. But if you respect the culture and you're making money from it, then I respect you as a person.
So what I'm guessing that you're referring to there is the whole Tekashi thing. Am I right with that?
I don't care about he's another piece of the puzzle, dog. So I'd rather not talk about him.
I feel you there. Are these the same things that you're teaching at the Houston Alexander Foundation, the HAF? Or like,
when we do the foundation thing, we're going inside the schools and we're teaching the kids about and how the culture got started. So with that being said, you won't see anything about an individual person. You will see how it came together as a whole. So we're teaching the culture as a whole. And then because a lot of kids don't know anything about the culture in the first place, all they know is rap. They don't know anything about the dancing or the DJing or anything like that. So our job is to go in and teach kids about the culture as a whole.
Well, right now with the quarantine going on, like, are there any documentaries that you think does justice for the point you're trying to make with everything you're motivated by and trying to teach to others that people can check out right now? Or do you have a video?
There's a Netflix documentary and I keep forgetting the name of the documentary, but it's a documentary on hip hop that teaches, it goes from era to era, city to city, and how hip hop developed all across the country, then the world. So, Netflix always has a whole bunch of documentaries that are pretty helpful. Especially there's a tattoo documentary about hip hop. So man, there's a lot of hip hop documentaries on Netflix that'll help you get caught up to the culture, just in case you don't know what the hell's going on.
So if I'm a clean white slate right now, what would you say would be some artists to check out? Because I'm trying to listen to new music. I'm sure there's a lot of people that have a lot of free time on their hand right now. What were some of your favorites?
What type of artists?
I mean, growing up when you're doing the graffiti thing, what were those?
As far as rap, or what artists are you talking about?
Rap, hip hop, country, anything.
No. So you keep saying rap and hip hop. Hip hop is the culture. Rap is the element in the culture. So there's different styles of rap, but there's not different styles of hip hop. So when you say, different styles of rap music, yes. But when you talk about hip hop, you're talking about the whole overall culture.
Explain the difference between those two, because that's really interesting that you said that.
The difference is, hip-hop culture is the culture in itself. Beatboxing, rapping, okay. DJing, b-boying, popping, locking, that's all part of the hip-hop culture. Rap has different genres. So if you want to do porno rap, you can do porno rap. If you want to do country rap, you can do country rap. If you want to do bluegrass rap, you can do all that shit, but it's different styles of rap music. Not different styles of hip hop.
Okay.
Okay. Sometimes you've had people refer to hip hop and rap because they're thinking about going back to the original essence of hip hop, and so that which is wrong to bring up to people who don't know nothing about rap music. Yeah. Rap music has different types of rap music, different regions of rap music, different styles. So when you say, hey, there's different styles of rap music, it's different styles of rap music. So that's how I will break it down to your listeners.
So honestly, with you doing the whole DJing thing right now, what are you exactly doing? Are you doing, is it like a pod? Because I've seen your podcast you started.
Well, the podcast is just an individual thing that I do for artists.
Yeah.
Or business people who are trying to put their information out there. So because it's a community podcast. To where we're trying to have people in the community let everybody know what they're doing. So, if you're not doing anything in your community but being a fucking a maggot and not doing anything for your community, then that's a different thing.
I see that a lot with you because you're doing more than just DJing. You're doing more than just, training at a gym. You're actually going out, and I saw you on something called Omaha Live, like where you're doing like these funny skits. How did you get involved with that? Because I feel like you're such a good actor. You should be in a ton of movies. Like, I saw one. It was called Birding with Houston Alexander. Can you explain that to us?
I need you to repeat this because I'm sitting here with someone that has to know. Hey, I'm a good actor, right?
Yes, really good.
Thank you. So, but no, it's just a sketch comedy that we were doing in Omaha. And it's almost like a Saturday Night Live. Matter of fact, it came on after Saturday Night Live. And we had Matt Tompkins, who was the originator of it, we just wanted to do skits. And then they came to our gym one day, and I was part of a skit, and I decided to want to do more with them. So, you know, it's just thinking outside the box and doing things outside the box. Especially after I did the thing with Key and Peele. So, it was cool to do something reflective of the Key and Peele thing.
Okay, so that's actually another question on my notepad here. The Key and Peele relationship. I saw you thumb wrestling. I saw you taking punches from them. How did this relationship start with Key and Peele?
One of the guys that got in touch with me on Twitter and asked me if I wanted to do a sketch. I'm like, let me think about this. How about yes? Because I've been a fan of the Key and Peele ever since they was on Mad TV.
Yes.
And I wanted to work with them, and it was just cool that they wanted to work with me because Terry Crews, who was supposed to have my part, wasn't available. So they asked me to do it. So I was like, hell yeah, I'll do it. And so they flew me out to LA, and I ended up doing their last show on Comedy Central.
So literally, that relationship with Key and Peele, having relationship, like for my journalist career, it's about knowing people. Where did you leave off with them now? Like, they're doing movies. Man, Us.
Man, I told those guys when I was sitting there at the table, I was like, I was told they were going to be doing movies. I'm like, yo, we got to hook your boy up. But I'm thinking, you got to be out there in Hollywood for all that to happen.
Yeah.
I was told they were going to be doing the Get Out movie and all the other movies are right there, but I just don't, again, I'm in Omaha, so I guess you got to be out there and do the auditions just like everybody else out there in L.A. When I was out there in L.A., I'm in Omaha, so the relationship is still there, but whenever they need me, man, of course, I'll be there.
And I don't mean to rewind, but I think you would be perfect on a TV show in Omaha like you're doing, but on a bigger scale for, like, children. Because you have that personality where it's, like, intimidating, but you're friendly. And that guy was just the perfect host. I saw the pumpkin carving one, the birding one. I saw a couple of them. You're really good with that. I'm surprised, it hasn't picked up. Is that something that you enjoyed as a kid, that kind of content?
No, man, we know black people joke around all the time, and we all joke around all the time, and it's, I don't know, it culturally is probably the same, but we always bag on each other, and always it was just a natural progression, man. So all they had to do was just tell me what I had to do and just keep it moving. So Matt Tompkins and his brother Ben Tompkins are good too. So it just worked out for me, man. Just helped me grow as an artist.
So I have one more question for you, and then something for you to leave everybody with. What is your favorite moment from your career? We were talking about that. Do you have any stories about training? Do you have any stories about backstage things? Last time we were talking about Kimbo. Do you have any other stories that stand out to you?
Peace to Kimbo. Right. And shout out to his family, man. You know what I'm saying? That's hard to lose somebody, especially that young. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If I can think about a moment that was, of course the Jordan moment was cool.
Oh yeah, UFC 71.
But a lot of people don't understand that, before you get to UFC, there's all these things you have to do before you get there. You have to put in some work. And I think one of the times when I was in Des Moines, Iowa, and there was a guy who was damn near 300 something pounds. And I just remember being in a ring with this guy and picking this guy up and slamming this guy so hard, we broke the middle of the ring.
Wow.
So, and if they had YouTube back then, it would probably go viral twice over. But they didn't have YouTube back then. So, But you know, but all, you know what, all the fights that brought me up to the point where the UFC point was pretty cool. So, but that particular one when I slammed that guy on his neck, the 300-pound guy on his neck, I said, well, actually got suplexed. Almost like the monster did what was that, Pride? When the movie, because the monster got inducted to the Hall of Fame recently.
Yep.
And I think the guy he fought at the time in Pride, where he slammed him on his neck before he lost.
He slammed Fedor. He slammed Fedor. Yeah,
he slammed Fedor, and so I slammed a guy just like that in the ring, but the ring broke.
Wow.
He was too big. And if anybody tried to dispute that, you can ask the production team that was in Des Moines at the time that watched it. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stories like that, man. But
I mean, Kevin Randleman, I mean, what stands out to you when that name's brought up, Kevin Randleman? Because I think the UFC did a great piece.
Hey, man, I trained with Kevin.
Wow.
I trained with him a couple of years. I think maybe a little bit in a little before 09. He was in the UFC gym, and we both were in the same ring together. We had sparred like a couple of rounds, and that was it. But all I can remember is like, God damn, this is a big fucking guy.
So did you?
This guy has shoulders the size of mountains.
Did you see the kindness in him, like they were bringing out? Because I think that's really important to show people.
It's always like, you know, most MMA guys, I'm gonna give you 95% of most MMA guys are respectful.
Yeah.
You know why? Because they have discipline. If you have discipline, it means that most people are really good people. So, no, he was a good guy, man. And shout out to his family and, you know, his kids and all the people that surrounded him. He was a good guy, man. He was 100% a good guy. And I'm glad I got a chance to meet the guy. And when I heard that he passed, I was really disappointed. You know, and it happens. It just happens.
Yeah, I mean, it gave me the chills when I was watching that. So thank you for sharing that story, because I feel like it's really important.
Kevin's a good guy, man. Real good guy.
It's important to share those kind of stories to show people that, like, you're seeing these people on TV, but they're actually really nice people, like you were saying about Kimbo backstage.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah, Kimbo, good guy, man. And I'm going to leave you with a story with Kimbo.
Okay, I love that.
The day Kimbo and I were going to fight, it was the day before, he had like 30 people with him. And I remember passing him up in the hallway. And I just remember, because I don't have a lot of people with me. I was by myself. I remember going up to him, and, you know, all his people was like, oh, shit, this dude trying to come up to Kimbo. And I was like, yo, I just want to talk to Kimbo. And they let me, and he saw me and told me to come through. And I just told the dude, you know, I respect you and your family, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, then we fought the next day, but... You know, we talked right before the fight. He was cool. You know, he a family man, and the same. It was cool, man. So, but that was what the last moment I had spoken like that.
Houston, I want to thank you so much. We're going to let you go with this. What have you been doing during this quarantine? I know that everyone's locked down for fighters, for entertainers. You know, everyone's going through their thing, but it's a good time to be an entertainer right now. So what have you been up to?
You know, I of course I've been training people, because I've always had equipment in my house, because I kind of knew that something like this or anything like this could happen. So you always got to be prepared, and that's one thing. So I train in my house. I got treadmills, et cetera, the whole nine. But, you gotta follow regulations and try to kind of, you know, do the 6 foot apart thing and wear your mask out there. So you gotta be responsible in that way. But there's a lot of things that, again, this whole situation is real, man. With this Rona, you know that's what black folks call it. That Rona, you don't want to get caught up in that Rona. So do what we have to do for this whole thing to pass. If you're one of those people out there that don't think this is real, you know, I had relatives pass in the past 3 weeks over this virus. Is that real? So, you know, what I've been doing is that I've been trying to educate people. I've been trying to you know, again, I've been training people, but, you know, at a safe part of it when I've been training people. And And again, just keeping things moving, man. You know, radio. I got a radio show coming up. There's a podcast all night. So if you're not active, then you're just sitting there looking like a plant.
I agree. And I'm gonna have all those links.
Don't be a plant, Ed.
I'm gonna be a plant after you and Mayhem beat me up and bury me.
No, we're not getting paid. So unless we're getting paid, then there's no beating up.
All right, that sounds good. Houston, I want to thank you so much. You're a legend of the sport. I've always admired you, and I love what you've done after, you know, fighting, hanging up the belt, and everything that you stand for and everything that you teach. You're a big asset to not only mixed martial arts, but the community and anybody that you come in contact with. And for that, I want to thank you.
And are you kissing my ass on your podcast?
Hey, there's only two people I'll do that for, my girl and whoever's on the show, all right?
Hey, are you saying this to everybody like this? Are you cheating on me?
No, I mean, listen, when Mayhem was pressing me, I was kind of backing up a little bit, but I was just like, you know. But we'll be talking to him in a little bit. Houston, thank you so much. Stay safe, and I'll have all the links for your podcast down below and some of the things that we spoke about as well down below for people to check out.
Everybody check out the foundation page, man, you know, and they're doing a lot of good things for the schools and taking care of the kids and make sure everyone be safe, okay?
All right. God bless, champ.
Ed, you will never guess who's sitting here with me.
Who?
These nuts.
Oh, you passed. And there's Houston Alexander for you guys. I just got him. Got him. I'm getting roasted tonight. Which means I'm all stressed out. Thank God I have a girlfriend. I got rats running around here. I got Mayhem driving me nuts. I gotta wait another hour and a half for him. So that does it for this interview with Houston Alexander. Stay tuned for Mayhem Miller coming up in just a little bit. I had to erase some of the questions I had for him. We're just gonna have a natural conversation. Don't ever want to run into Houston Alexander or Mayhem Miller in a back gallery, Allie, especially not this week, because I'm gonna get it. And with that, I'm Evil Eddie from Pure Evil MMA, white knuckles to the end. Remember, without evil, there's no purity. Behave yourselves.